Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Ernst Rahl from Geisenheim. How are you, Ernst?
Pretty good.
Excellent. We're going to be talking a little bit today about vine breeding, what's going on there, how you go about breeding vines. We had a wee look around your vineyard, and we saw some quite nice vines, and you showed me where you're getting new plant material.
Yeah.
Let's start off with the basics, because something that really confused me, or not didn't confuse me, but I was a bit surprised about, was you said that vines have a male and a female plant, and you're showing me these male vines. Why do I not see male-female plants in the vineyard?
Okay. Originally, our, wild ancestors of our grapevine varieties, they were male and female. That is a good way to protect self-pollination. And the idea of basically breeding or sex is to mix genes. Mm-hmm. And that's what the idea is. And to be sure that genes are mixed, having male and female plants is a very good way to ensure that this happens. Yeah. Of course, for growing them, it's not so good because we would waste a lot of vineyard space.
Yes,
because we would need, let's say, 10% plants that are not producing any fruit. And so that was most likely one of the first things that people actually bred out of it during the domestication of grapevines.
When was that?
Possibly between 5 and 10,000 years before Christ.
Okay, so they knew a bit about these hermaphrodite grapevines.
Yeah, it's possibly it didn't go from here to tomorrow, but it's sort of was a development. So people were sort of using the grapes and possibly they developed systems to propagate them by cuttings or by layers. So that was a starting point of cultivating them. And breeding, of course, was already involved in that process.
Layering is where you make a cut in the cane and then you put the scion.
Well, with grapevines, because they've got long, flexible shoots, you just dig them in the ground and they will develop roots.
Oh, and
so
then you
just take a long cane, put it in the ground, and a year later it's got roots. You just cut it off, plant it to a new spot. So you didn't need any technical equipment. A shovel would be nice, otherwise you have to do it by hand.
Yeah.
That's pretty straightforward. And because of that system, you have identical plants from the same mother plant.
Yeah, yeah.
And they will have the same characters.
Yeah, yeah, sure. And do hermaphrodite, the modern vines that everything produces flowers, are they having sexual reproduction and producing the grapes? Or, you know, can you take a grape seed and plant a new plant from a grape seed?
Well, you could do that, but there is a big chance that they were actually self-pollinated. So you will not have new characters in there.
But so it's like a clone almost?
Sort of. If you want to mix basically varieties, then what you have to do, you have to emasculate the flower, which means you have to take the male parts of the flower, the anthers, out before they actually open. So you do that with a pair of tweezers because the flower is, very small, only about a millimeter in size. And then you take the pollen from another plant and then you have a real cross between those two varieties.
Yeah.
So you take one that's disease tolerant and one that is producing high quality. And of course you hope that you get one that's disease tolerant with high quality. And usually you get some that are not disease tolerant and have a low quality.
Okay. So that must be quite fiddly work if you've got are they like a normal flame plant where they have Damon, is that the male part that stick? Is it like a
the anther is a male part. That releases the pollen.
Yeah, it's like an antenna. Do the male plants just have those antennas and none of the female bits, or do the flowers look all identical? Or
yeah, they look very much the same.
Okay.
In the wild species, then you actually have flowers where you don't have any male parts, or no female parts. So you also have a flower that only has anthers.
Mm-hmm.
For example, they will only produce pollen and no fruit at all, and also no seed.
You don't really want that.
Yeah, in the others, you have basically both parts. And most of the time, when the flower opens, It's already been pollinated. So therefore, you have to really remove the anthers before the flower opens.
Okay, that is a fiddly job, isn't it?
That is a really fiddly job.
That's what you get your students to do, is it?
Well, not really. We usually have skilled technicians to do that.
Okay. All right. So let's say you want to develop a new Riesling clone, because we're in Geisenheim, Germany. So do you start by fertilization, sexual reproduction, or?
No, we're not doing that. If we would do that, if we would do a cross between Riesling and Riesling, what we would get out is not Riesling, because our grapevines are heterozygous.
Mm. What does that mean?
Which is, well, rather complicated. Let's different way. If you have a brother,
It
has the same parent like you have, but your brother doesn't look identical to you.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not identical twins.
Yeah.
So there are sort of common characters from both of you. Possibly people recognize, well, you are related, but you're not identical. And the same thing is there. So even if we have Riesling as a male and female parent, we will still have not identical plants coming out of that.
Yeah, sure. But there's different Riesling clones.
Okay.
So they must have had some sort of sexual reproduction.
No, they're not created by sexual reproduction. The Riesling clones been created by mutations, which means from all kind of reasons, some genes just stopped working or changed. Yeah, for example.
So you started out with one plant, you cloned it up, you got thousands of them, you let them grow, and then, I don't know, just a freak of nature, something gene switches off, and then you've got another clone.
Just possibly an example. Most of our wild relatives of our grapevines have black or red berries.
Yep.
The reason is very simple, because the idea of having a grape is that birds eat it.
Yeah, so color is the...
And color, of course, creates attractivity. And so what was an advantage was color. But we have white varieties, and the white color developed through mutations. And we still have varieties where we have actually all three colors. Think of Pinot Noir. We have a Pinot Noir with a blackberry. We have Pinot Gris with a red grayish berry, and we have Pinot Blanc with a white berry. So we have basically all the stages still present. That gives you an idea how mutations work. And that's what you can see.
So they're not different crossings. They're originally the same grape.
It's the same plant.
Okay. Now that makes sense. And also, people talk about if you plant a vine in a vineyard, you know, you get a cane, you stick it in the ground, and you leave it there to grow, and you get the same clone, stick it in a completely different vineyard, they actually grow differently. Would that be different genes being turned on and off due to the conditions? Because people say, you know, if you get a vine from a different slot, they sort of develop, they grow into their environment.
Okay, of course, genes are switched on and off depending on climate and site. If you have a hot climate, there will most likely be other genes activated in the plant. If you have water stress, sure, other genes have to be active in the plant.
Mm-hmm.
But still, basically, the overall toolbox in both vines are the same.
Okay, so if I get a vine, I stick it in a hot place on limestone soil. It's another one, stick it in perfect conditions, the right amount of water, let them grow, big plants. They grow quite differently, they look quite different, but then I take one of them and cane and stick it in the other place, it'll adapt to exactly the same as the original, unless something's happened in the part.
Okay, yeah, if there no mutation was happening on the other location, it should actually still be identical.
Okay, and I presume if you have two Riesling plants start out the same, you grow them on different sites, and over 1,000 years or so, it may not need a particular gene. It doesn't hurt it, so it's fine. It switches a couple off and never uses them. And then that's when you get your evolution. Is that right?
That could happen.
Could happen.
That basically you have types developing that have different characters.
Okay. So let's get back to your vine breeding. We had a look on the hill and you said, look, I've got these rows of vines here and they're in sets of three, and you've gone off and gathered canes from different vineyards.
That's right. The problem we are having is basically our crepe growers always ask for new, better clones. Issues at the moment, of course, global warming.
Mm-hmm.
So people are thinking about, well, in 20, 30 years' time, we possibly need a Riesling with more acid.
Yep.
At the moment, we have more the opposite problem, that the acidity might be a bit too high.
Yep.
But in years like 2003, we had not enough acid. So if the weather really turns like 2003 as a normal thing, we will need clones with more acid.
Yep.
And that's where we're trying to just preserve the genetic material that's around from Riesling. And, well, we keep them in sets of three, just in case a tractor runs over one of them.
Oh, you're saying someone throws a dog and they fetch the stick and they come back with one of your lovely clones? Yes,
or that, something like that. So sets of three makes sort of sense.
So you're just going into vineyard. You're not actually creating new crosses. To create a new Riesling, you're just going into vineyards, pulling out material that's already there from older vineyards. Not
the reason for using older vineyards is not so much that older vineyards are so good, but they had a lot of time to develop different types. The other thing is that in old vineyards, we didn't really have material that was gone through a breeding process. If you go to a young vineyard, most likely that's been planted with a clone. So every plant comes basically from the same original mother plant. So they're genetically all identical. If I take 20 of those plants and I plant them, they should all be the same.
Yeah.
While in an old vineyard, you have a good chance that you have different types.
So what, the farmer's had a couple of rows and then he's put a bit of dead wood in the ground. Well, not dead wood, but that layering technique we spoke about.
Yeah, or just a cutting.
And then, or maybe he's borrowed his mate's cutting from down
road. Yeah, that's exactly. Possibly had some gaps and the guy next door had nice looking grapes, so just jumped the fence.
Okay. All right. So you take your cuttings from a vineyard. You're looking for unusual, interesting material that you're pretty confident is Riesling or whatever the vine is that you're after, and you stick it in the ground. You grow it, and then how do you make your selection on what you think works? Is it just, you know, you make some wine, and if it tastes good, that's cha-ching.
Yeah, well, sort of it's a bit both. One thing is that what we want to do is just preserve the genetic range. So in one sense, we're not that much interested in having the real top new clone, but we would also collect something that nobody wants. At the moment, people want not high yield, they want rather low yield. But if we would find a plant that produces really a lot of crop, we would still keep it because, well, we don't know how things will be in 30, 40 years' time.
Yep.
That's one part, so that we want to collect the genetic diversity. The other thing, of course, is that people are interested in clones. So if we find something and say, gee, that might be good, then we multiply it. We do wine tastings on them. We check them on a larger acreage to get better details on their cropping behavior and so on. We possibly also go to different sites.
Geisenheim, you've really only got one type of soil here, I presume. How do you find out if the clone is particularly adaptable to another type of soil or do you not?
Okay, by trying. So we just go to the site and check. The good thing here is we have a pretty deep sandy loam. And for breeding, that's nice because you have just a very uniform soil. But you only have one. So if we want to have results from how does that vine grow on a different location, we have to go to the location and try.
You get your vine, it's grown, you've produced some grapes, you're happy with maybe how the vine stood up to phylloxera because you've got it in the vineyard, you're happy how it stood up to the weather or mold or mildew because you're watching it, and then you say, right, I think this looks like a good characteristic, it might be high yielding, it produces great flavors or whatever it is, and then you'll take it and go to multiple sites to see how it performs in different sites.
That's what we do.
Okay, all right, now that sounds cool. And then what happens? You commercialize it and sell it for lots of money?
For lots of money. Yeah, okay, we commercialize it.
do you commercialize it? Do you take ownership of vines and do you sell?
We actually have royalties. So if you buy a crafted vine, between 5 and 10 cents are royalties on it.
Okay, and that goes to you guys. And how long is that? Is it like other types of patents where it's 20 years or is it?
Yeah, well, royalties in case of plant variety rights. The thing is, they only protect actually the planting material. If you have a patent on something, then you can protect everything. So if I would have a patent, which is not possible in Europe, on a grape variety, I could actually charge people for selling the wine.
Oh, nice.
It would be nice. Yeah, that's a thing that's possible in America. So, for example, table grape industry in America is booming because lots of breeding activities because people charge on a kilogram basis of table grapes being sold.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so for every case of table grapes, they're possibly getting 10 cents. Yeah. Well, that's not a lot, but it adds up.
Yeah.
But here, people only pay once when they buy the planting material.
But Geisenheim has an income stream from these vines.
Well, let's say it that way. It helps survive.
It's more like your beer money, is it?
It's not paying for the operation.
It's your beer money on a Friday, yeah?
Yeah, it's good to have.
Yeah, okay. All right. Okay, then, Ernst, I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much.